Blog Talk Radio.
Andrew Socek, thank God for Tommy Dreamer. Because if not for Tommy Dreamer, Eddie Edwards may have followed through with the murder, his word, not mine, the murder that he promised us on this week's episode of Impact Wrestling. And that would have been sticky for everybody. I mean, you brought it up on Twitter. We would have been witnesses to a crime. You know, we could have been brought in for questioning. Everybody could have been. Anyone who's on the line here who called the show tonight or is going to call the show tonight to watch tonight's show. I mean, geez, you thought that Don Callis and Scott D'Amore, you know, had some issues with TV tapings and things like that. Imagine if somebody murdered someone on their television. That would have been quite the predicament for a new ownership. I can't imagine Anthem would have been very happy with a murder on live TV.
No, I'm out of breath right now. I'm nearly speechless. I'm sweating. Man, I thought he was going to go through with that. But yeah, thank God for Tommy Dreamer in his Lucha Underground shirt in the middle of the woods. Man, that could have been bad.
Well, he did say it too at one point after I think he pried Callahan's eye out from his head with a stick. He did say, "Sammy, it's time to die." And at that point, that's when Tommy Dreamer showed up and saved the day. And thankfully he did, because a murder would have been a very different show tonight for you and I if we had to be talking about the murder that we had just witnessed.
I'm just glad everybody knew where the woods were.
Oh, like,
hey, I want to fight you in the I want to fight you in the woods. Well, where are the woods?
I mean, find my iPhone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, man. Yeah, I'm just so glad. I am so glad.
I'm going to add that part to it for our own enjoyment. So Tommy Dreamer and Alicia Edwards used Find My iPhone to find Eddie Edwards, and that's how they prevented the murder from happening. That's how it is in my head anyway. So we can thank Steve Jobs. I mean, if he didn't invent Find My iPhone, Sammy Callahan might be dead right now.
Eddie Edwards facing a lifetime in prison. And really, I think we just have to stop covering the show after that if we watched a man die. It just wouldn't feel right.
Yeah, if we watched a man die, we'd have to cancel the live cast. Sorry, guys, we just can't do it.
Like Moose versus us, you know, Moose versus Eli Drake. What does that matter if a man dies in the middle of the woods?
In the middle of the woods, not even in the middle of the ring, in the middle of the woods, because it had to happen in the middle of the woods. If you're going to murder someone, you're not going to do it in the ring. Of course you would do it in the woods. It only makes
sense.
With
the cameraman.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked how he was very specific with, even if he dies, keep filming. Because if you kill someone, you want it on tape. I mean, I've never killed someone before, and nor do I ever plan on it. But I'm thinking, if I ever want to do like a really one of the biggest crimes you could possibly do, one that in some states would get you the death penalty and other states would certainly get you put away for life. If I was going to commit a crime of that magnitude, I would absolutely want it on tape. Right. Right. I mean, would you not?
Like, well, why does he want him to keep rolling after the murder? Like, what then? I don't get it.
You just need proof, you know, kind of zoom in, make sure he's actually not breathing maybe.
Yeah, like make sure I go to prison.
Yeah.
I guess.
Make sure that you get me committing this felony.
And bring it to Impact Management and make sure they air it.
And air it on TV so that everyone knows it was me.
I want a short trial. I just want to go to prison the rest of my life.
Yeah, I mean, this was silly, right? I mean, we've made fun of it now for like 5 minutes, but I thought it was a little ridiculous last week when Eddie Edwards said that he was going to murder Sammy Callahan. Like, I kind of got a chuckle out of it. I was like, you know, it's kind of a ridiculous thing to say. And I was like, you know what? I kind of wrote it off. And I talked with Greg about this on Wrestling Night in America on Sunday. I kind of wrote it off with like, you know what? He's turning heel, so whatever. I mean, but they doubled down on it tonight again. And it's just, I don't know. It came across real silly and kind of stupid. I mean, he obviously wasn't going to kill him. So I don't understand what the point of that was. Like, why say it and not just once. Like, why say it again and again and again? It was clearly directed that way, because if he just said it once, like last week, if he had just said it in passing or happened to say it when he was cutting that promo, because he's going a mile a minute and he's yelling and screaming, if he just happened to say it and they kept it in, okay, fine, he's turning heel, whatever, it's not a big deal. But I mean, they mentioned it like three times tonight, so they were doubling down and tripling down. It was clearly directed that way, and I quite frankly, I just don't understand it, because I don't. No one watching the show expected to see a murder. You know, was it just supposed to? Was that supposed to put over how intense the feud was? I mean, I don't know. Just to me, it came across kind of silly.
Yeah, I mean, if you remove the murder stuff from that, I would be fine with that ending the night, because it's, you know, it's kind of a novel way. You're not giving away a big match. It could, in theory, be kind of fun. I also like that they went to the effort of saying there's going to be a cameraman there.
Yeah, that's true.
But they obviously had like five cameramen there, but I can overlook that part. But yeah, once you get into the murder stuff, that gets silly. His, I guess, official heel turn of just kind of poking Dreamer in the belly with his bat was kind of weak. It's not like he, yeah, you know, stood over him, nearly beat him to death. Yeah, it was silly. And Eddie Edwards just does not have the acting chops to pull this off. You got to be a really good actor to make it work. Conan could. Sammy Callahan's pretty good. Eddie Edwards, just it's cheesy. And it's just, you know, I'm like holding in laughter the entire time watching it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's as far as Broken Universe, but I mean, it's kind of walking that line where with this in particular, though, I think they want us to take it seriously, and I'm having a hard time with it because, like you said, Eddie Edwards just doesn't have the acting chops to pull it off. I'm fine with Eddie Edwards as a heel. I just think this way, doing it this way, is just pushing the pedal all the way to the metal on the intensity and the I hate him so much, I want to murder him. That's kind of a complete 180 from where Edwards was as a babyface. So what I usually like when you have a babyface turn, when you have a heel turn, is when wrestlers don't necessarily stray from who they were in the previous iteration of their character, which I think you can do. You know, your motives change, your mindset changes maybe, but you're not a completely different person from one week to the next. And this feels like all of a sudden a flip switched and Eddie Edwards was a completely different person. And they've done an okay job of telling the story why. You know, his wife was injured and all this other stuff. But it's just it's such a far cry from where he was 2 months ago when he was a babyface. It just doesn't feel natural enough to me. I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't feel like it's a natural transition from babyface to heel, because it's almost like he's a completely different person rather than the same person he was, just with the motives changing. And I'm trying to think of an example. Like, you can almost kind of look at like DX, right? So look at, I bring this up because I was watching it earlier today on the network, but you look at like the Triple H led DX when they went from the heel DX of Shawn Michaels and Triple H to the kind of the babyface DX of Triple H, X-Pac, and the Outlaws. They were the same guys. Like, their attitudes didn't really change. Their characters didn't change. Just their motives changed. But they were still the same guys. And that felt like a natural transition to me. But this just feels like it's two completely different people. And I don't know. I don't think that this type of turn generally works.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I'm trying to think of some other kind of just crazy abrupt ones, turns that just, you know, it didn't work as either. I'm sure there's plenty of examples out there. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel natural. Eddie Edwards is just too much likable of a guy. To me, he's kind of like Daniel Bryan in that sense, where even though he's been a heel, it's hard to hate him, really. And I just don't see this angle working that effectively to make people hate him. It's just a weird long angle in the first place. I mean, you know, what's OVE? How are they going to be positioned coming out of this? Why is Tommy Dreamer the guy chosen to do this? I don't know. It's ups and downs, and tonight could have been fun, but yeah, it was pretty cheesy.
Yeah, I think they're gonna probably end up going with Edwards and Dreamer at Slammiversary. Mm-hmm. I mean,
but
like you said, why is Dreamer the guy in that role? I'm just not sure that should be the guy in that role, you know?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I guess you would pull Davey Richards out of retirement once more. you know, to take in this personal thing. But it's, yeah, Tommy Dreamer, just the guy who was fighting Rob Van Dam 5 years ago in our flashback of the week wearing MMA kick pads. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just, I don't get it.
Yeah. I don't get it either. It seems really, I mean, I guess if they're going to do a hardcore match, like, like Dreamer makes sense, but did they have some type of storied history? I mean, does Eddie Edwards and Tommy Dreamer, have they known each other for 20 years? And did Dreamer help break Edwards into the business? I mean, I don't think any of that's true, but if it is, they haven't told a story like that. And you easily could. I mean, even if it's not true, you could kind of tell the story. Oh, Tommy Dreamer was a mentor of mine. I mean, come up with something to make Dreamer feel like he has a reason to be part of the storyline rather than just he's a guy who showed up.
Right. No, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, in the end, I'm assuming he'll, Eddie Edwards will go over on him. But man, it just, I don't know if there's like a long-term plan in place here, because I am kind of concerned about OVE. I've you know, said almost week after week how they've been one of the most entertaining parts of this show. And do you really want to sacrifice all three guys to getting Eddie Edwards over as a heel? I just don't know if that's a great move that's going to really pay off long term.
Yeah, I don't. There's many facets of this that just is odd to me. Another thing that was odd to me, I don't know if you saw, did you catch any of the press conference that they had earlier this week for Slammiversary?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so I didn't see the thing live, but I saw some bits and pieces, and as part of the press conference, and this is a spoiler, so if you don't like spoilers, please tune out. But I don't know if it's really a spoiler, because it's Impact giving away their own stuff.
Right, yeah.
They announced at that press conference that Moose versus Austin Aries will be the main event for Slammiversary, and then they announced tonight that Moose is going to wrestle Eli Drake next week, and the winner is going to face Aries in Slammiversary. Am I being too harsh on them for this, or is this just, hey, they're being really stupid and shooting themselves in the foot for no reason whatsoever? Because I'm assuming that Moose Drake match is probably going to main event the show next week. It should. I mean, it's the number one contenders match for a slot in one of their only pay-per-views of the year. It should main event the show. You could turn it off. I mean, turn off the show at 9:45 next week. It's not going to matter. You know who won. Am I overreacting to the fact that it's like, hey, you guys couldn't have planned this a little bit better and maybe aired that match last week instead of next week when you knew you were going to have this press conference on June 4th?
No, I am with you. That is pretty stupid. I mean, it's not like the pay-per-view is 2 weeks away, so you want to hype it, I don't know, as much as you can and try to get people to buy it, or it's later today. I mean, it's July 22nd, so you still have 6 weeks, so wait another week to do that. That press conference, especially because it's Moose and Austin Aries. I mean, yeah. That could easily main event an episode of Impact instead. And I don't think people would think Moose is really getting the shaft by not getting a pay-per-view main event out of it. But yeah, I mean, just protect your storylines. Of course, this is you know, they tape these shows weeks in advance. But yeah, I mean, give people every reason to tune in that you can and not to tune out. So no idea why they did that, unless the restaurant or bar they had was the only night they could get it booked.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah, I wonder the dynamics of that too. I am looking forward to seeing what these Toronto crowds look like. I mean, obviously the show is going to be in Toronto. I guess the Impact tapings they just had weren't Toronto. They were technically Windsor, but reports from there is that those crowds were paid, number one. But also really good. I saw a couple of videos on Twitter. It seemed like the things we're going to notice, I think, from those shows are that the crowd's going to be more into it, number one. It seemed like the crowd was lit differently in that building, probably because there was more people there. But from the videos I saw, it kind of looked like how the Impact Zone looked like, you know, up until 2012, when there was enough people there where they lit it to the point where it actually looked like a small arena. I don't know what it's going to look like on the final product. I mean, I'm talking about fan videos that I saw on Twitter, but yeah, I'm excited to see what and what they do moving forward. I mean, they just taped in Canada. They're going to run this pay-per-view in Canada. Are they going to go with a more Canadian crowd or more Canadian tapings and try to get it over Orlando? I think anywhere is better than Orlando right now. I mean, realistically, anywhere you go to the, no offense to people in the middle of Kansas, but go to the middle of Kansas. I mean, I don't care. Go anywhere. Go to put the show on a boat in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, anywhere is better than Orlando right now, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, tonight's show is once again pretty brutal. Overall, I actually liked tonight's show. I thought there was some good stuff on there. People would come across as so much more of a star if the crowds actually cared. Like, I think they're doing good stuff with Brian Cage right now. And I, you know, doing the occasional like, oh man, he is going to slay this guy type of match can be fun to watch. And the crowd just didn't care, you know, for the Brian Cage squash. They didn't really pop for much in general. And there was some good action. I mean, the opening match was good. There's another good tag match on the show, but yeah, man, they're just not into it. It's the same people every week in the front row. There's people wearing the same t-shirts. So yes, I mean, just get out of there as soon as possible, as much as possible. Because yeah, it's unfortunately just a brutal reception every week down there now.
Yeah. And I also, I noticed some of the things that you noticed a couple of weeks ago where, you could tell that some of these matches were taped on different nights because you see different people in the crowd.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that kind of goes back to the whole putting a taping schedule together and why can't you just figure out a way to book these things in some type of succeeding order? You know what I mean? Or tape them in succeeding order. I guess it may have been difficult at the last set of tapings because I know Austin Aries was going to miss the last couple of days, I think, for some reason. So I think he was there. I forget exactly what days they taped, but let's say Aries was there Monday and Tuesday and wasn't going to be there Wednesday and Thursday or something. So that may have been a reason why they had to film some of the stuff out of order. But I don't know. It just feels – a lot of it feels disjointed. And then especially on this episode too, I mean, kind of like when we got to the end of the taping schedule last time around when I was doing my report on PWTorch.com tonight, I felt like I was typing the words, a video package aired, quite a bit.
Yep.
You know, this just seems to be what happens when they get to the end of a television taping and they've only got a couple of episodes left. I don't know if it's a lack of planning or what, but it seems like we get to the end of a taping schedule and these shows end up with a lot more video packages or much longer GWN moments of the week.
Yeah.
Did you kind of catch that too? I mean, just there were four matches on the show. One of them was that the fight in the woods match. It just seemed like there was a lot of, let's go to a video package. Let's go to another video package. Let's go to another video package with not a whole lot happening. Even the Austin Aries, Josh Matthews interview over Skype, which I thought was fine. I mean, I'd like to see them do more stuff like that. If there was a purpose for them, that seemed to lack a purpose though. So it kind of struck me as, ooh, we're going to be 4 minutes short on this show. Let's try to get someone on an interview on Skype this week to fill out the time. It felt like there was a lot of, we got to fill out the time here and find something to make it work.
Yeah, I will give them some credit for at least doing that as opposed to, yeah, showing a match from Pro Wrestling Noah.
Yeah,
that has nothing to do with anything. So, yeah, I would rather them take their current characters and try to get them over in that way, even if it's over Skype and looks, you know, not that great. But, yeah, I did notice the video packages, and I think it kind of stood out more because last week was pretty, you know, video package heavy as well to set up all those matches. I did like, I think, you know, most of the ones that I saw tonight, I think they did a pretty solid one with Madison Rayne. I'm not a big fan of them giving her such a big push again, but, you know, they're making the most of it with that. So, yeah, I mean, and especially the GWN stuff as well. It seems tonight they didn't even try. They didn't set it up at all. They just jumped into Rob Van Dam versus Tommy Dreamer in a match I would have never thought of again. So, yeah, the pacing has definitely been an issue. And it's kind of frustrating to watch from a fan's perspective why that keeps happening, because doing stuff like that just kills the show. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are just like, well, I'm not going to watch Van Dam versus Tommy Dreamer from 8 years ago. So
yeah,
flip the channel. Maybe they don't come back. It's just, I don't really see much of an upside there for that.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, they're up against some stuff right now. I mean, you've got the NBA finals going on. You've got, in the background right now, if you're a hockey fan, I'm watching the Stanley Cup finals. It's on in the background on mute as I talk right this second. So there's a lot of competition that they're facing. And in a couple of months, they're going to have the NFL back again on Thursday nights. And that, you know, could take a few hundred thousand viewers away in a blink of an eye. You know, they've got to find a way, I think, to make these shows feel as interesting as possible, because you don't want people to click away. You know what I mean? Because it could happen pretty quickly where if they find something else interesting, they're not going to come back. And, you know, they can get away with it a little bit in the summer because the summer, there's not a lot going on in the summer on TV. My wife and I were just talking tonight as we were eating dinner about how there's nothing on in the summer on TV at night. Yep. It's all just reruns. So you can get away with it in the summer. But, I mean, right now, right? I mean, this is the Stanley Cup game is a one-goal game in the third period. Washington's one win away from the Stanley Cup. You know, you could pull for Todd Martin if you want to and be a Capitals fan. But yeah, I mean, if someone in the middle of a video package they care nothing about, you put this game on and is a hockey fan, they're probably going to stay with it. So there's other things that even though we're still technically in the summer, could still be taking eyeballs away. And I think that they got to do a better job of trying to get as much content taped as possible during these tapings, just to make sure that they have what feels like original content and not a video package. Like a new video package might qualify as original content, but if it's recapping something that we've seen three times, people are going to click away.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know, it's kind of weird because it seemed Impact had some momentum as of late. A lot more people are watching. That's kind of all gone at the moment. That might be because of the playoffs. Or just the summer and nice weather out, but they should have been trying to keep building on that momentum and, yeah, again, not give people an excuse to turn out. But, yeah, I mean, these pacing issues have been there for months now, and I don't get why it hasn't been cleared up. I don't know why there isn't more matches they just tape. Like, at this point, you would think they would say, hey, we keep running into issues. Let's tape two additional matches just in case.
Yeah, just to have them.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't ever use them, just put it on YouTube. But
they have their big app that they, I mean, put them on your app. Be like, hey, we've got three GWN exclusive matches on our app right now. I mean, if you're not going to use them, throw them on your app that you have people that you're trying to get people to pay money for.
Yeah, it's just, it's a very lazy approach and just kind of go back to that GWN thing again, just to keep hitting that. Like, I don't understand why, like, don't show 5 minutes of a match uninterrupted. If you have to take 5 minutes of that match, maybe have Tommy Dreamer in the studio talking about that match, have Josh Matthews set up the importance of it. Do more with it than just show that. Because, again, if I want to watch that match, I could probably find it on YouTube. And if I don't, well, I'm not going to pay $10 to watch the first 5 minutes of that match anyway. So just a complete waste of TV time and just a really baffling thing that they keep doing on a week-to-week basis because WWE would never show 5 minutes straight of Diesel versus Doink from 1993 without any context.
I mean, you could also do, they're so video package heavy, air a video package on that match. Show some highlights. Do it in 30 seconds to a minute. Put some music behind it and say you can see the full match on the GWN app. But give people the highlights. You know, people don't need to see Tommy Dreamer climbing up to the top rope. Just show us him coming off the top rope or whatever. Cut out all the stuff in the middle that feels like it's a giant waste of time, especially for a match that if you're a longtime fan, you already know what happened anyway, and promote it by just show us the big stuff. You know, what's going to sell the app? It's not 5 minutes of a match with no context, like you said. It's the big stuff. Show us the big stuff and then tell people where they can go and see the whole thing. But again, I think it goes back to we need to fill time. We need to fill time. Yeah. We need to fill time. That's kind of what it feels like to me, unfortunately. All right. We got to get to a break, though. When we come back, we're going to get to some phone calls, and we'll talk more about this episode of Impact with some people on hold. So you can give us a call at 515-605-9345. 515-605-9345. Remember, if you're on hold, you got to hit the number 1. That's going to tell us that you want to be in the caller queue. If you don't hit the number 1, we are not going to know that you want to get on the air. So make sure you hit the number 1. That's going to tell us you want to get on the air here on the live cast on a Thursday. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take your calls here on the PW Torch live cast.
PW Torch live cast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday Edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harlaw talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about, like, the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them, like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast, we're going to get to your calls, 515-605-9345. Let's go first to Ryan in Maryland. Ryan, how are you?
Good. First question I have for you is, the Munster Matanza, the main candidate to be this mystery attacker backstage.
Is who, sorry?
Matanza, Jeff Cobb from Lucha Underground to help promote the new season?
I don't know. I'm not sure, honestly, if they have an agreement to work with Cobb or not. I would imagine they could. You know, they're obviously partnering with Lucha Underground, so I don't know if it'll be somebody new or if it'll be somebody on the roster. Andrew, what do you think there? Do you think this is a build up to someone like Jeff Cobb, or do you think it's going to be someone who's already on the roster right now?
I think it's possible. Somebody like him or Mil Muertes from Lucha Underground. But yeah, again, I don't know if they'd want to do that long term, depending unless they do have some sort of deal.
Unless they have their own agreement, yeah.
Yeah, he might be. I don't know if they would go for him just because he's with Dario Cueto. So that's kind of, I guess they've been paired apart. But, you know, he would be an interesting choice. I don't know if they'd go that route, but I do. My guess is it's somebody new that we haven't seen before, a debuting wrestler, or I don't even know. Yeah, I mean, it could be, but I'm not feeling likely because I don't know if the X really is ringing a bell to me for why he would be using that as a symbol. So that my guess is that it's a new character that uses some sort of X as a calling card.
In my second question is about the streaming service that Impact Wrestling has. I know that their company is a professional streaming service, or at least they specialize in that. How do they compare to the Ring of Honor streaming service and the New Japan streaming service? Are they far superior to both of those, or are they sort of lacking when you're streaming on their channels?
It seems to me that it's probably lacking a little bit just because there's no live events on there. You know, New Japan World, I know, broadcasts via live events. I believe, yeah, the Ring of Honor app, I know, does live events as well. So the GWN app right now is just their library, and that's it. I don't think there's any live events. I think they've had some exclusive content, but nothing that's live. Andrew, what do you think there? I mean, it kind of feels to me that it's a step behind the other ones.
Yeah, I would say probably so. I will admit I don't have a New Japan or Ring of Honor. I did have the Impact GWN one for 3 months because I think we got it for free when we ordered. Oh, God. Was it last year's Slammiversary or Bound for Glory or something? Yeah, I honestly just didn't even look through it too much. I saw, you know, a bunch of old shows were there. A bunch of pay-per-views were there. But yeah, I mean, and for $8 a month compared to WWE's, that's just, you know, it's not even close to the same sort of deal unless you're just over the moon for Impact and what they've been doing. But yeah, I think it's that lack of live events that hurt it. So correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, I mean, it does seem like if they should be putting those Twitch shows on there to get people excited and to get exclusive content. So I would say if you're a big fan, yeah, probably the other ones are more for you unless Impact is your kind of go-to promotion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're just an Impact fan, obviously I think the Impact app or the GWN app is the one that would be attractive to you the most. But you know, if you're just a wrestling fan, you're going to get a lot more, I think, on New Japan World or the Ring of Honor app, just because you're going to get archive footage and then you're also going to get live events as well.
Okay. And third question about the Mexican talent that's been in Impact Wrestling. Does Impact have a very high ratings with the Latino audience compared to the WWE and Ring of Honor, or is it pretty close to the same?
I'm sorry, I think I'm having some computer issues. It cut out a little bit. I just heard, is it the same? Andrew, did you hear that question?
Yeah, if kind of Latino wrestlers I'm sorry. If the Latino audience is bigger for Impact than it is for other promotions. I don't know. I actually wonder that it might be due to the relationship with Lucha Underground. LAX is being pushed very heavily. They're bringing in guys like Drago and giving them a bit of airtime. So I wouldn't be surprised, but nothing I've ever read. I mean, I remember back in the day, SmackDown used to have kind of a large Latino audience when Rey Mysterio Jr. and Eddie Guerrero were getting big pushes, but I have not read or heard anything to that effect with Impact. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either. I mean, I would imagine they might have, I wouldn't say it's necessarily larger than the other promotions, but you know, they have the ability to partner with Lucha Underground and AAA. So, I mean, I would imagine that there's a segment there. I'm not sure that it would necessarily be larger, though. Those would be some, that would be interesting demographic numbers to look at, though, especially as you look at some of these partnerships, you know, with Pro Wrestling Noah and AAA and Lucha Underground. Is it paying off? You know, are those partnerships paying off with fan bases kind of growing in those individual markets? They'd be certainly interesting numbers to look at, but those are probably more internal numbers that Anthem has than anything we'll ever be able to get our hands on.
And my final question for you is, do you see either Kelly Blanchard or Magnum TA making a cameo in Impact Wrestling, since Tessa Blanchard is pretty prominently featured on the program now?
I guess I don't know. I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you, Andrew. Have you?
I think it would be fun if it was Tully. Isn't he a minister now, or he kind of turned to religion? So
I know he hasn't done much with wrestling. That's the only thing that gives me a little bit of a reservation, is I know he hasn't done much at all. So he may kind of be out of the wrestling light, you know.
Yeah, that would be my thing, too, is I don't know if he'd want to come in and, you know, necessarily be a heel or anything. Because, yeah, I mean, I feel the last time I saw him was at the Four Horsemen induction in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, I don't know. I would say probably not. Magnum TA, God, I haven't seen him in many years. I don't know how health-wise he's doing, or, or if he is with WWE in some capacity. I don't know. I don't know. I would say probably not, though.
Yeah, I guess if I were to have to say a yes or no on it, I'd probably say no as well, just because we haven't really seen him involved in much wrestling that I can think of anyway. So I would venture towards no, but hey, you know what? At the end of the day, if his daughter came to him and said, hey, there's an idea, you know, do you want to be a part of it? It's going to involve me. As a dad, he might say yes. Who knows, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I just, yeah, wouldn't bet on it.
I do know he takes bookings from Maryland Championship Wrestling. He did do so with his daughter about a year or two ago, but I think he got accidentally injured in angle he was doing with her.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call. All right, let's stick with – actually, let's go to another quick break, because we were a little behind on the first one. So let's hit another quick break, and when we come back, we'll go to more phone calls here in the PW Torch Livecast at 515-605-9345.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, wait, aren't you going to put any pants on? He just goes, no time for pants. And he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
So, Salamonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, the Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
All right, back here on the live cast. Let's go up next to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
Pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah. Have you? How did you like watching the potential murder of Sami Callihan tonight?
I loved it. I can think of nothing better to do with my week. I don't know about you.
You know what? If you ever have a Thursday where there's nothing going on, watching a potential murder on television is always a nice way to spend it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really excellent way to spend a Thursday. I highly recommend it.
What's on your mind tonight, Kyle?
In case no one could tell, that was a joke, ladies and gentlemen. So, to fill in what Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland just said on our last call, the last time that Tully Blanchard was active full-time in a wrestling company besides his 2006 run as a WWE agent, which lasted 2 weeks after Tully could not handle being mistreated by former WWE announcer John Bradshaw Layfield, would have been 1993 after a stint in ECW and WCW.
Yeah, I knew it had been a while. So yeah, no, that makes some sense.
Oh, so now on to my first question, which is in regards to potential Impact departures. And first, I am going to ask you to look at the departure of the inventor of the dummy. Yeah, app. Eli Drake.
My favorite thing.
With WWE semi-confirming, depending on who you listen to, their interest in signing Eli Drake, who do you think will take over his top heel position if he were to leave, and when do you expect his departure to occur?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I guess that might be why they're trying to position Eddie Edwards there. I don't know if he's necessarily going. I mean, they're very different types of characters, obviously, but it could be that they're trying to position Edwards as a heel to kind of take that spot. As a heel on the heel side of the roster anyway. So I could see that being the case. Andrew, what do you think there? I mean, it kind of feels like, you know, they're moving some guys around, but Edwards as a heel kind of replaces Eli Drake as a heel. And then with Drake, I mean, when that departure could happen, I feel like it's pretty soon. I've heard it reported all over the place, right? But sometime over the next 2 or 3 months, it seems like anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it could even be sooner. He might only do like one more set of tapings or who knows. Yeah, he's probably gone pretty soon, I would say. As for who will take his place, man, yeah, that's going to leave a pretty big hole. He's eaten up a lot of TV time over the past year. So I kind of defer to this a lot just because due to the management and their approach, like they might just bring in somebody new, somebody else from the independent scene to eat up that TV time. Maybe Johnny Impact will turn heel when he comes back in July. Otherwise, yeah, Eddie Edwards looks like he is set for that course, unless they want to say like kind of get behind Sami Callihan, give him some more heat, and you know, post feud with Eddie Edwards, I could see him still kind of remaining towards the top and getting quite a bit of promo time. Otherwise, yeah, nobody is really standing out to me. I mean, and I'd like to say Trevor Lee, but yeah, it's not going to happen. So yeah, a couple different choices there.
Okay, and for the second part of this particular question, perennial East Coast cast caller Mike from Brooklyn reported that WWE is also interested in former Impact World Champion Pentagon Jr. and his brother Rey Fénix for their cruiserweight division. Who else from Impact do you think they may be interested in, and what name do you think Impact could go after to replace them if Pentagon and Fénix were to depart for WWE?
Ooh, that's a really good one. Yeah, I mean, of Impact guys that WWE might be interested in for their cruiserweight division, the guys that kind of stick out right at the top are DJZ for sure. And then, you know, I'm not sure that WWE would really have interest in anybody beyond that. I mean, I don't think WWE looks at Trevor Lee the way that we look at Trevor Lee. So I'm not sure that he would be a guy that they would particularly go after. Yeah, it's hard to say. DJZ definitely stands out as the top guy, though, that they would, I think, have interest in. Andrew, is there anybody obvious that I'm missing here? I mean,
Sorry, did you just say Trevor Lee?
No, I said I don't think I would. If I were in charge of WWE, I'd be going after Trevor Lee. But I said I don't think that they view Trevor Lee the same way that you and I do.
I bet Vince McMahon wouldn't, but I think
that's,
you know,
what I
Triple
mean. Yeah. Triple H, maybe. I think Triple Vince H McMahon. I think Vince McMahon is going to look at Trevor Lee and go, "Okay, that looks like the guy, you know, walking down the street, heading home from the convenience store." You know, I don't think he looks at Trevor Lee as being a star the way that you and I do. But you know, Triple H may have a different opinion. That's for sure.
Triple H, I think, has a pretty solid eye for talent. So to me, it's a matter of time before Trevor Lee joins the company in some form. I'd say within the next year or so. I don't know if he's under any sort of contract that would prevent him from doing so.
Also friends with the Hollies, too.
As for other wrestlers, yeah, nobody's really standing out. I mean, DJZ has a good personality. Andrew Everett's pretty bland, unfortunately. Caleb Conley's pretty bland. Nobody is really standing out there. As for wrestlers who could take Pentagon's and Fénix place, I would look to the rest of the Lucha Underground roster since they have that relationship going.
Yeah, I was going to leave that. I was going to ask you to answer that part of the question, especially because I know you're much more familiar with especially Lucha Underground than I am. I mean, I have a couple of names that I'll bring up, but the Lucha Underground guys are the ones that I'm the most interested in.
Yeah. So I think Willie Mack, I think he has a ton of untapped potential. I think he would be a great in the promotion. Matanza, if he came in, he could be a good heel, upper level. He's great in the ring. Jeff Cobb. Mil Muertes would be a lot of fun. He used to be in the company as Judas Macias in that feud with Abyss many years ago. I think those would all be great talent that you could shoot to the top right away. Maybe not Willie Mack. They might, you know, they could run some angles with him, but I think Matanza and Mil Muertes could pretty effectively be top guys right away in the promotion.
I mean, there's a couple of guys that people outside of New England and the Northeast may not have really heard from. I know there's some guys making some noise up here in the independent scene that might at some point stand out to somebody like Impact in their X division. The one guy that comes to mind that I've seen a lot of is a guy by the name of Christian Casanova. I know he's had some pretty high profile matches in some of the higher profile indies here in the New England region. He's a younger guy too. He's probably 22 or 23, but a good high flyer, smaller, you know, definitely on the X division side of the roster, at least for now. But he's got a lot of character and personality behind him. He's not just a guy who goes out and does moves. You could probably find some of his stuff on YouTube. I know he had a pretty good match with Donovan Dijak in a company called Chaotic Wrestling that runs a lot up here in my neck of the woods. You know, and then aside from him, I mean, I'm sure you can look at some of the guys, whether it's Ring of Honor or guys that are used but maybe not under any type of exclusive contract with a company like Ring of Honor, or, you know, you could kind of take a dip into the Lucha Underground AAA rosters as well and look at some of your partners. But yeah, I kind of think that it would more than likely be somebody, they would try to get somebody that has a name value behind them, which is why they would probably try to pull another guy from Lucha Underground. But that's just a guess on my part.
Okay. My second question concerns Impact overall business model and future. Podcast host and WWE Network personality Conrad Thompson told Sports Illustrated earlier today that his and Bruce Pritchard's topic for next week's edition of the video version of Something Else to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard on the WWE Network will be AJ Styles' tail end of his tenure within TNA/Impact Wrestling. And they hope to have fully licensed footage incorporating into the show. With this announcement by Conrad and TNA/Impact being more friendly to WWE in terms of licensing of footage and other endeavors, and Impact still experiencing lower ratings than they would like, and us constantly hearing Anthem is possibly looking to get rid of them, are we coming closer to Vince McMahon buying another piece of competition, or are we not?
I don't know. I would venture, I would lean towards more that we're not there yet. They've partnered with WWE Network before with footage, and I think the agreement was that they just kind of put a link to the GWN app, you know, at the end of the show or during the show or whatever it is. So I think it could be something as simple as that. You know, I think if your Impact, I believe I read a stat that they're app ranking after, I forget what it was it a table for three, or there was something that they used a bunch of Impact footage for, and they aired a little thing at the end of it that was like, hey, you could download the GWN app, you know, at this link. And I remember reading an article the next day or the day or a couple of days after that their app ranking, you know, exploded over the next couple of days. Like, so they generated some business from that advertisement on WWE Network. So if they're going to do this again, I mean, if I'm Impact, I'm looking at it going, yeah, you know what? We'll give you guys the footage to use, run the advertisement for us again, and it'll drum up some business for us. I mean, I think it's a good fit. You know, I really do. I think it's good for Impact. I mean, obviously WWE gets to use the footage. It's good for them. I think it's good for Impact because they get, you know, hopefully some eyeballs on their product out of the whole thing and generate some dollars through their app. And also, the important thing with generating the dollars with the app is it's reoccurring dollars. You know, so if you're Impact, would you rather, you know, 500 new subscriptions to your GWN app, or would you rather WWE pay you $10,000 for some footage? You'd rather the app subscriptions, because ideally that money's going to roll over from month to month, and you're going to make more in the long run than you would with a one-time payoff from WWE. So I think it's more just a, hey, we'll give you the footage, and hopefully we get something out of it too. And Impact is very much in the realm. I mean, we've heard Don Callis talk about it numerous times. They're trying to break the paradigm of pro wrestling and partner with other companies and be fine partnering with other companies. And I think WWE is at a point now where they're such a global leader. They're just more comfortable doing things like this with Impact Wrestling. Now, you wouldn't have seen them do it with WCW in 1998. You know, they wouldn't have shared footage this way. But Impact, even if it triples in size, is not even going to put a dent in WWE and their business. So I just don't think they view it as competition to really be bothered with at this point. Andrew, what do you think there?
Yeah, I mean, even though the ratings have been very inconsistent for Impact, I mean, they were, you know, really high for them, you know, maybe 6 weeks or so ago, and now they are under 300,000 again the past couple of weeks. I still think overall there's, you know, enough signs of momentum that Anthem would probably want to hold on to this a little bit longer, especially with that massive TV deal that WWE cut. Maybe they think they can for sure get more money out of their next one than basically nothing that they're making. You know, the GWN apps, like you said, Mike, YouTube videos, they've been bragging about how those have been getting a lot more views. But, you know, I also, on the other hand, WWE has so much crazy amounts of money right now that if Anthem did have massive financial problems or wanted to unload the promotion, I think WWE would be more willing just to buy them, just because they have an insane amount of money. And the fact that they are open to using that footage, so they, you know, they could just use it whenever they want. So, but yeah, I think Anthem will probably hold on to this for a while longer and see if, you know, their momentum continues in any form.
And my final question concerns the Knockouts division. Is Anthem in any position to sign any more Knockouts to contracts, or should they even, or should they just use the limited number that they have, more than what they already feature them?
I don't really think that they're in a position to add anybody else, only because they're not, you know, like you kind of said, Kylan, they're not having enough time to feature the ones that they have. I mean, we saw Kira Hogan tonight in a backstage segment. She got beat up by Tessa Blanchard. We haven't seen her in months, or at least several weeks. So, I don't know. You know, I don't think they really need to add anybody else right now. That's just kind of my thought. I think you should kind of devote more time to the ones that you do have, and hope that you can make that part of your roster feel more important just by featuring the women you have in a better light. I don't know. Andrew, what do you think there?
I'll probably go the opposite direction and say they should bring in some more women, give them some more TV time, mainly because I think that's something that WWE is not doing all that well right now. So Impact could potentially have bragging rights over their women's division. I mean, Nia Jax, Raw Champ, Carmella, kind of the focal point on SmackDown. It's just not very exciting overall, and you see the same matches over and over and over again in WWE. So I would like to see half a dozen more women show up, because it does seem to me at times that you do see the same ones, or they're like, you know, like you said with Kara Hogan, they're not really focused on enough. Yeah, so I think it would be a good idea for them to pursue that once again and try to reclaim that, you know, those bragging rights of having the superior women's division, which has kind of been a long time for them at this point.
Well, that's it for this week, guys. See you next week.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Kylan. We appreciate it. All right. We need to get to another break. So let's do that now. When we come back, we'll run down the show and kind of hit on a couple of the things happening on Impact that we have yet to talk about. And then we'll wrap up this week's edition of the Thursday Livecast. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a second here on the PW Torch Livecast.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast, Andrew Socek and Mike McMahon with you for another couple of minutes. If you want to try to sneak in a last phone call, you can do so at 515-605-9345. Again, just make sure you hit the number one on your phone to let us know you want to get on the air. But Andrew, let's kind of run through the stuff we haven't yet talked about as I try to pull up my report here. Bear with me. My internet's going slow.
Oh, man.
Although I'm still on the air, so I can't complain. But let's bring up, let's kind of run through the show here and bring up some of the stuff we have not touched on yet that occurred on this week's episode of Impact Wrestling. They opened the show with DJ Z and Andrew Everett, Z&D. They retained the Impact World Tag Team titles over Drago and Arrowstar. I thought this was a pretty good match. The one thing I found interesting about it, though, was the commentary. And I'm not going to complain about it. I thought it was interesting that Don Callis, I don't know if you noticed this, but especially towards the end, he kind of buried these guys. You know, he talked about how, you know, the high flying moves were nice, but I forget exactly what it was here. What did he say? Did I write it down here? I didn't write down, I think, exactly what the quote was. I'd have to go back and listen to it. But I know he used the term wasted movement a lot. And you kind of look at the style that these matches usually evolve into, and the fact that at one point, I think Arrowstar took out Drago and DJZ, and then it's not long after that, Andrew Everett took out all three of them on the outside. So you've got guys taking out their opponent while also taking out their partner. There seems to be a lack of logic to these sometimes, and it was just interesting to me to hear Don Callis actually point that out.
Yes, overall, I'm definitely enjoying his commentary on the show. I like that he takes things in a more... far more sports-like way route than just about anybody else does. But yeah, it is kind of interesting when he does that on occasion. The match itself, I thought it was a good way to start the night. It must have been close to 20 minutes or so, if you put in commercial breaks. I still think we need to know more about Andrew Everett and DJZ as a team in order for them to really get over. And this is one of those instances where the crowd... just kind of let the wrestlers down. You put this in front of an NXT crowd, and it's a great match. This crowd, it was like, yeah, it was a fun way to start the night, but it didn't get you pumped because of how unenthusiastic they were over everything.
From there, they went to some backstage stuff. Shocker. Sanjay Dutt and Petey Williams argued over the attack last week. Sanjay Dutt kind of hinted that he thought Petey Williams may be the one attacking people. They've aired a video package on Sue Young versus Ali. Then they went to LAX, finally getting a win back. LAX went to the ring with King, and Diamante returned, by the way, before this. She seemed a little upset that King was in charge and didn't seem like she trusted King all that much. But LAX had King by their side, and they beat Trevor Lee and Caleb Conley. The story here, obviously, that LAX finally got their win back, or finally start to get their momentum back with a win here. It seems to me that this is clearly building towards in Conan versus Eddie Kingston power struggle for LAX. I mean, I don't know. I feel like the natural story here is, okay, LAX was losing. The King showed up. They started winning again. And now Conan's going to come back and want to take control of LAX. And King's going to say, well, no, LAX is now, you know, doing well, you know, since I showed up. So, Conan, we don't need you anymore. And there's going to be some type of LAX feud between Conan and Kingston. That's what I feel like this is going. What did you think of this match, and where do you think it's going overall?
The match itself was good. I thought it was another entertaining tag match. I say this almost every week, but it's too bad that there's not more tag teams to go with, because we just saw this a couple weeks ago. And then it's, you know, it's like, where else does LAX go from here? There's like two other teams for them to fight to continue the story. The angle, this is another one where I'm kind of questioning everything, because what's the payoff? Like, Conan's not going to wrestle, so we're not going to get him versus Eddie Kingston. Maybe I'll guess that the LAX guys go back to Conan, and then Eddie Kingston finds himself another partner or another couple guys, and then kind of goes to war with them. That's what I'm thinking. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's going to break the group apart, and you could see either Conan come back with a new group of guys, or you could see, you know, either LAX, the tag team, sides with Conan, or they side with King, and then whoever loses, whoever they don't side with, gets their own tag team, and you've got some type of six-on-six feud where Kingston and Conan probably don't wrestle, but their tag teams kind of go after it. I feel like they're setting up some type of intergroup war here, or a power struggle. I mean, and especially because they kind of hinted at it even more tonight, where Diamante just didn't seem like she trusted Kingston at all. You know, there seemed like there was definitely something going on there as well. So I'm not quite sure where it's going to head, but I definitely think it's heading towards a Kingston-led faction against a Conan-led faction at some point. You know, probably Slammiversary or not long after.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right. After that, they aired more video stuff. Oh, actually, no. They came back and Eli Drake had his Facts of Life segment. That set up the Eli Drake Moose match next week, where the winner will face Austin Aries for the world title at Slammiversary. And like we said, if you watched Impact's own press conference this week, you know that Moose is going to win that match. So thanks for ruining that. Then Brian Cage beat Rohit Raju. We talked about this briefly. Cage won this match in a matter of seconds. And then Matt Sydal, it seemed like the match was there to give Matt Sydal an excuse to come to the ring. He confronted Cage. Cage hit Sydal with, he hit him with an F5, right? Is it called something?
Yeah, he did.
Is he calling it something else or no?
They used to call it something else, but I think Don Callis did call it the F5, which is good, I guess. Yeah,
I mean, it's an F5. We all know what it is.
Yeah,
I'm fine with that. And then he raised the X Division title. Then more video packages aired. Josh Matthews interviewed Austin Aries on Skype. We talked about that. Johnny Impact is coming back. There was a video that aired on that as well. I think it aired last week too. But Johnny Impact.
Slamtown.
Yeah, Slamtown's coming back at Slammiversary, baby. What a time for it. I mean, if Slamtown was going to return, it's only appropriate that it return at Slammiversary.
Man. Yeah. They got my $40 right there.
The mayor of Slamtown will return. Then video package out of Madison Rain. A side note here. Am I the only one that is not excited or doesn't really care about the fact that Madison Rain is returning to Impact Wrestling?
No, you're not. I mean, yeah.
I feel bad. Like, it's nothing against her, but she was just like, they're making it sound like, you know, this is the biggest star in the history of women's wrestling is back in Impact. And it's like, well, no.
She was good in The Beautiful People. She had a good run as the Killer Queen gimmick, I believe it was.
Yep.
But to me, she's always been just a bad baby face. There's just nothing exciting about her.
Terrible baby face.
Yeah. She had some good runs, but man, it doesn't do much for me. And yeah, we didn't talk last week, but man, yeah, her going over on Tessa was just... Oh, I don't know what they were thinking on that one.
And it's not like she's like, I get it. If they're making it seem like her character's fine. She's been treated as a pretty big deal. So it works, I guess. Right. But what I don't think works about it is they're building this up like she's this world-class wrestler. And she was never that, you know?
No.
So, I mean, it doesn't kind of feel like the type of thing that really should be built up as being all that exciting. And also, like you said, her going over Tessa last week was just, oh my God, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm definitely questioning this, because the last times we saw her on TV as well, it would just be randomly for a week or two. She would lose and then go away. So to now be like, no, she's a huge deal. Well, then why didn't you treat her as a big deal the past few times we saw her?
Yeah.
So not buying it.
Yeah, exactly. And then they went to the murder in the woods, or whatever we're going to call it. The unsanctioned fight in the woods between Eddie Edwards and Sami Callihan, which we've already touched on. Let's briefly, before we wrap up the show, kind of look ahead to Slammiversary. We know it's going to be Aries versus Moose for the world title. Are there any other matches that you look at and say, okay, this just makes sense. This is going to happen on this show. We talked about Dreamer and Eddie Edwards. Seems like it's going to happen. Is there anything else? Because that show is that's a little more than a month away. It's up like probably 6 weeks away at this point, maybe 5 or 6 weeks away. But is there anything that you're looking at other than those two matches and saying, okay, this is what I think we'll see on this show?
Just kind of off the top of my head, I would go Rosemary versus Sue Young in some sort of
gimmick match. Yeah, she'll have to come back from the dead, speaking of murders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or a triple threat match. Throw Allie in there. I could certainly see that as well. LAX versus LAX, I guess, in some form. I don't know if they'll drag out Madison until Tessa again. So that would be a while for that one.
It'd be a long time.
Pentagon. I don't know if he's around anymore.
That's a good point. That's a problem. We just don't know who's going to be around for this pay per view and who's not. It's a really good point.
Yeah, it is. So it's not looking overly exciting at the moment. Of course, they have 6 weeks to make this thing work. But man, I mean, Moose is just such a cold character. I don't think they can heat him up anywhere near as much as he needs to be to make that a compelling match. What do you think?
Yeah, neither do I. Moose, they've built up Moose as the face or Mr. Impact, whatever he's been calling himself for a while now. But I don't think they've treated him well enough to make it work. I mean, they could have protected him to the point where it would have worked, but they haven't protected him enough. You know, to me, they have not protected him enough to make him feel like he's a viable contender and someone that's going to take the title from Austin Aries. I think it's no question that Aries is going to win the match. And also, too, I think this shows us the fact that Aries won the title back so quickly. I guess it's been a couple of months, right? So it's not totally quickly, but I think what it's showing us is that Austin Aries was probably supposed to win or it was supposed to beat Alberto El Patron at Redemption. Because it feels like they went, oh, well, we'll put the title on Pentagon. No one will see that coming. It's a fill-in match. You know, it's kind of a fill-in match. It'll be a way to shock some people. And then at the same television taping, we'll get the belt back on Aries. Because remember, Aries won the belt probably like 3 days after he lost it. In actual real time.
that's true. Yeah.
So, I think that it would have meant that Aries would have held the belt through Redemption and probably would have beaten El Patron had the plan gone through the way it was supposed to. So I don't see him losing at Slammiversary. I just think the plan is, I feel like the plan is they're going to go with Aries against Cage at Bound for Glory. Because there's no other – I mean, what other heel do you put Cage up against? I mean, it's just – that feels like the match for Slammiversary to me.
And I don't think that's bad, to build towards that. Yeah, I mean, tonight really stood out to me for Moose in a bad way. I mean, just like Eli Drake is out there, he's funny, he's confident. Moose comes out there and tries to make fun of his dummy catchphrase, which we're both fans of, so that's not going to get him over. It just didn't – he just is not that strong on the mic. He's a likable guy, so there's a way to get him over as the likable babyface, but he's just not all that cool to me, and especially because he's been involved in so many bad angles. They've got to build up some other people, so that's disappointing. I mean, to go from Pentagon – Phoenix Aries to Moose Aries for pay-per-views. They got a lot of work to do if they want to make that a compelling match.
Finally, before we wrap up the show, we'd be remiss if we did not congratulate Todd Martin, who is probably celebrating somewhere right now. The Washington Capitals have won the Stanley Cup, and there's lots of tears on the ice, and I'm sure... I don't know. Todd doesn't strike me as the crying type, especially like the happy crying type. I don't know.
This might get him. He puts on a tough exterior.
I know DC sports fans have struggled for a long time. So as someone who really can't complain ever, because I live in Boston and we basically win some type of world championship every other year, I can't make fun of anybody. I mean, I'm not afraid to admit it. When the Red Sox won the World Series in 2004, I bawled my eyes out like a baby. So, yep, I'm not afraid to admit it. So if he is somewhere crying right now, you know what? Enjoy it, Todd, and all the power to you. Cry as much as you want because...
Crying, yeah.
Cry tears.
Cry for me as well, because I'm from Minnesota, so I will never, ever experience anything like that.
Would it have been what? I was going to say, when's the last time?
1991.
Was it the Twins in 91?
91. I was in first grade.
Wow.
We did it.
I remember watching that on TV. It was the Braves, right?
Braves. Seven games.
Seven games against the Braves. I remember watching that game seven. I think I was in first grade also. But I remember watching that game seven on TV with my dad.
that's a classic.
1990. So 27 years. Wow.
That's how long it's been. Yeah. Longest, I think, of the Big Four. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a long time in Boston. I mean, like the Celtics won the NBA championship in 1986 when I was two. Then the city didn't win anything again until the Patriots won the Super Bowl in 2002.
That's a long drought. Yeah,
I was 18. So I was 2 years old. I don't remember that. I was two, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so the first Patriots Super Bowl, and I have to say first because there's been four of them now or five of them. Five of them, yeah. Jeez. But I that was the first one that I remember, and it took all the way till I was 18. So it kind of felt like I went through my whole childhood with they're never going to win anything. No one in this town is ever going to win anything. Then I think since 2002, we've had three World Series, a Stanley Cup, an NBA championship, and five Super Bowls. So I can no longer talk to anyone ever again. It's just like I'm done. I have to almost not bring it up because I feel bad for some people and some of these stuff. You know, because I questioned when I was 18. I'm like, I'm never going to see it. None of the teams that I follow are ever going to win a world championship. And then they've won, you know, 10 in the last 16 years. So I have to stop complaining. I have to stop complaining about everything ever again.
We've just had heartbreak here, a lot of it, and you know, maybe someday we'll win something.
Well, I know the Vikings have been close a couple of times too.
Very close, yeah. Man, that's a sore subject.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Believe me, I remember the feeling well. I can't say anything now, but I remember the feeling well.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right. Anything else we need to add before we wrap up the live cast here for this week?
I don't think so. I will plug pwpodcast.com. Briefly, I put up three recaps right before the show tonight. The Jim Ross report with Drew McIntyre. That's an interesting one. He talks about McIntyre talks about his immaturity in his first run. Kind of, are there locker room leaders right now? How he's grown as a wrestler. Why being released was the best thing that happened to him. Chris Jericho with Stu Bennett. Really interesting as well. He's very open about his frustrations with talent. There was an incident, kind of a heated conversation with Michael Cole that I had never heard about. So that's a fun one. I know. And Killing the Town, Cyrus and new host Paul Lazenby. They kind of talk about NJPW and Impact Wrestling talent on Chris Jericho's cruise.
Yeah, what happened homicide with Lance Storm, by the way?
Yeah.
Did they ever say anything?
I don't know.
Because I've missed a few episodes, right? And then like the last 3 or 4 weeks, it's been Callis and Paul Lazenby, and I'm like, what happened to Lance?
I feel like I should be the guy who should know, and I
mean, I don't know. I don't think they ever announced anything, did they? But I don't know. Maybe I just missed it.
Yeah, they said they kept saying he's off this week. He's off this week. He's taking some time off. I feel they alluded to it last week that it was something to do with Sami Callihan. I don't know if that's like an angle that they're doing. I should go back and I need to listen to that episode. But yeah, it's weird. It's not quite the same.
Yeah, I like Lance Storm.
But yeah, it's still a good show. Osiris is always interesting. So check that out and check everything out. Otherwise, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Andrew Souck.
I'm actually reading here. So I just went to the Killing the Town Twitter page and somebody says, Lance, sorry if I'm prying, but what's up with Killing the Town? Don said you're on hiatus, but there's been some repeat episodes, and I'm not quite sure what the deal is. And Lance Storm's response on Twitter was just, Don is in charge and running things for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's very strange. Because, yeah, they did put out a new poster. Lance Storm is no longer on that. Lazenby is on it. So he's, I'm assuming, gone.
Well, that's sad.
And I don't know why, because he was like the host of that show.
Yeah, yeah.
So I hopefully he comes back in some form someday.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like Lance Storm. I like his, I think I've mentioned this a couple of times, but I, for whatever reason, like my wrestling fandom never really lined up with where he was. By the time he joined, I never watched ECW live just because it was hard to. I mean, it was on, I think in my local market, it was on like 2 a.m. on a Friday. I believe on the Spanish channel, oddly enough.
Oh, wow.
I think it was on Univision. Although it didn't air in Spanish, but like they would buy time on Univision at like 2 a.m. on a Friday or Saturday morning. So I never watched ECW live. I watched ECW more later on in my wrestling fandom, especially when the network came along. And then by the time he went to WCW, it was towards the end of WCW, and I wasn't really watching that show anymore. And then by the time he got to WWF, right around the Invasion is where I kind of tuned out for a couple of years. Yeah, it was like from like 2001 to about 2003, I just kind of was like, they had fumbled the Invasion so bad, and I was like, this is never going to get any better. And I just kind of went away for like 2 years and then came back again. But yeah, it was, so I never really lined up with where he was in his career. So I didn't watch a ton of him wrestle, but in like 2009, I just came across a Lance Storm Shooter interview, and I was like, oh, I'll listen to this, even though I don't know much about Lance Storm. And I listened to the whole, it was like 3 hours long. And I listened to the whole thing, and I was like, you know what? I like Lance Storm quite a bit. Like, him and I think very similar about the wrestling business. And he tells good stories. So I was pretty excited when I heard he was, you know, getting his own podcast. But yeah, I'm kind of bummed out that he's vanished here all of a sudden.
Yeah, I wish he was a part of the Impact management team of some sort. I don't know if he's a super creative guy, but I think he could poke holes in some of the rough storytelling we've seen. He's kind of honest about that.
He could be like a quality control guy.
Yes, I think he'd be great at that. He used to book with Paul Heyman.
That's something that he in the interview that I remember listening to like 10 years ago almost at this point, he had talked about how he used to book with Dreamer and Raven in ECW. It was kind of like that was the four-person booking committee at one point.
Man, but maybe him and Cyrus aren't on the best of terms right now.
Who knows?
They're being mysterious. You did bring up the Invasion, so just some little wrestling trivia tonight. I believe the first shot fired in the Invasion angle was Lance Storm.
It was.
Super kicking Barry Saturn.
Barry Saturn.
Not Goldberg, Spear and Steve Austin, or Kevin Nash, powerbombing Triple H, Lance Storm.
And super kicking. It was in Calgary.
Oh, was it? Is that what?
So in that interview, Lance Storm talks about how, you know, he didn't even know he was debuting that night. He had gone to the building just to say hello to people and all that other stuff. And he brought his gear because that's the story. You know, you don't go anywhere without your gear. And somebody, I think he said John Laurinaitis came up to him and went, you know, you're working tonight. He went, yeah, you know, go screw. I'm not working. And he went, okay, well, you're working tonight. And he left. And then I think Malenko, he said, I think it was, came up to him at one point later on and said, you got your gear? You know, you're working tonight. And that's when Lance Storm was finally like, oh, well, I guess maybe I am. And in the interview, which is, again, he doesn't pull any punches. He's a very honest guy. He's talking it out, you know, with the interview, and he's going, you know, it's this whole WCW Invasion, and it was really cool to be a part of. He's like, but even me, like in the back of my head, I'm thinking, I'm starting this whole thing? Like, of all the people in WCW, I'm running in and super kicking Perry Saturn, and that's the start of this whole thing? And he was like, you know, it's a cool moment to be a part of. He's like, don't get me wrong, but I couldn't help but think, like, really? Like, why am I starting this?
Oh, it's so baffling. Yeah, and
that's what it was.
I think week two was Hugh Morris giving the no laughing matter to Edge or Christian.
I think it was.
Why those? I mean, those guys are talented.
I mean, that's
talented.
Really all they had at that point.
Yeah, I guess. Or, yeah, I could have It's either them or Buff Bagwell at that point.
He also told a great story. Do you remember how they flew a bunch of the WCW guys down and they were at, was it WrestleMania 17?
I think it was,
After the invasion, right after they bought the company. It was in Houston.
I think that was 17, yeah.
So it's in Houston at the Astrodome. It's right after they bought the company, and a bunch of the WCW guys were just shown in a luxury box, and that was it. They didn't have any – they were just shown in a luxury box. And Storm tells a really good story about that too, where he says that they had called them like the Friday before, all those guys, and said, you've got to come down to WrestleMania. We're going to have you do something. And then they got there, and I think on Saturday, he had said that Sean Stasiak had stooged off in an interview that they were all going down to wrestle. Oh, yeah, they're flying us all down for WrestleMania. All the WCW guys are going to go invade WrestleMania. So then by the time they got there, it had gotten out that they were all the WCW guys were going to be there. And Storm was like, the WWE management was just like, you stupid idiots. Like, we brought you all down here, and stupid idiots let it out that you guys are all going to be here. So now we're not doing anything with you. We're just going to sit you in a box, and you're not going to do anything. They were all supposed to interfere in the finish of the Vince versus Shane match on that WrestleMania.
Oh, wow. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, that would have been like the kickoff to the actual invasion. That was supposed to be the original idea. But then they got down there, and everybody from WWE was like, you stupid idiots. Like, you can't keep anything secret. Everyone knows you're here. Now we're not – it's not going to be a surprise if you interfere. So, yeah, you're not doing anything now. And they made them all go sit up in a box and just watch the show. And I don't want to give away this entire 3-hour interview. We'll be here all night. But another part of that story that was kind of funny was, I think he said it was Chuck Palumbo was one half of the WCW Tag Team Champions at the time.
I'd have to go. Yeah, it was Sean O'Hare, I believe.
Yes. So I believe he was talking about Palumbo and not O'Hare, but I could be wrong. But he said one of those two guys. You get the phone call on the Friday of like, hey, you got to get down here. We're doing something at WrestleMania. You guys are going to be on the show. We got your airline ticket. You got to get down here. And Palumbo, I'm going to say it was Palumbo, but it may have been Sean O'Hare. Palumbo said, oh, do I need my belt? And whether it was John Laurinaitis or whoever it was like, well, yeah, you need your belt. Like, yeah, bring it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Palumbo's car was in the shop. So he had his belt in the trunk of his car, which was locked in the dealership because it was being repaired. So Chuck Palumbo, before he gets on the plane, in the middle of the night, I assume he had like a 5 a.m. flight. So in the middle of the night, he has to break into the car dealership so he can get to his car to get his belt out of his trunk. And I guess to break in, he climbed over a fence that had like barbed wire at the top of it. Mm-hmm. So Lance Storm is telling the story in this interview, and he's like, we all show up in Houston, and we meet at the airport, and here comes Chuck Palumbo and his shirt's torn up and he's bleeding everywhere and he's got like some puncture wounds all over him. We're like, what the hell happened to you? And Plumbo's like, oh, I needed to get my belt. So he goes Chuck Palumbo showing up like he just went through and got beat up somewhere on the plane, and then Sean O'Hare letting everybody know that they were going to WrestleMania, their big debut at WrestleMania, got screwed up and it never happened.
Man, that angle was just cursed. Nothing else in my wrestling fandom has ever pissed me off as much as that angle. I could go for hours on it, but man, that's interesting to know. I had not heard any of that.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. So anyway, that's Lance Storm story time, I guess we'll call it for this week.
weekly segment.
Yeah. I remember that 3-hour interview almost completely. I've got it memorized, I think. I remember so much about it because I remember being such a big fan of it at that point and then being a fan of his after that. So this whole thing started about 20 minutes ago with us being disappointed that Lance Storm is no longer on Killing the Town. So
there you go.
Still disappointed. All right. So that's pwpodcast.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon, PW. And Andrew, they can follow you on Twitter where?
Andrew Souck. So check. Yes,
that's right. All right, well, that'll do it for this week's edition of the PW Torch Livecast here on a Thursday. You can check out all of the shows here on the livecast by going to pwtorchlivecast.com. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. You can get links to listen to all the shows daily. And if you're a VIP member, you'll get a lot more if you go VIP. Next week, Andrew and I will do a VIP after show where we give our predictions for Money in the Bank, which comes up a week from Sunday. But that'll be next week. But you'll get a lot of things, more than just Andrew and I, on our sometimes VIP after shows. You're going to get access to Todd Martin, who we were just talking about earlier. You get access to The Fix with Todd Martin, the Bruce Mitchell audio show, daily updates from PW Torch editor Wade Keller. Wade is going to tell you a lot more about going VIP in just 1 second. So if you are not VIP yet, you should listen to all of the VIP details in just a second, and then go VIP at pwtorch.com/go VIP. But that'll do it for Andrew and I this week here on the live cast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for calling. And we'll talk to you next week as soon as Impact goes off the air, right back here on pwtorchlivecast.com.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Life.